They are Sports Illustrated.
It's amazing.
This incredible body of work.
I really appreciate the integrity.
Everything you do is well done.
You guys do a great job.
We love it. What can we say?
He's Chris Mannix.
He's employed by Sports Illustrated.
The announcer's got it in for me.
There you go.
This is the Crossover NBA Podcast.
You have a problem with it? Build a team that can beat them.
Hosted by the one and only.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God.
Chris Mannix.
All right, Nick Wright is here. First things first, Sirius XM Radio and one of my occasional on-TV nemesis.
What's Hi, Chris. What's How
the,
are you?
What's the plural of nemesis? Is there a...
I think...
Nemesi?
Nemesi? I'm not sure, but I'm only one person, even though I'm sure when you're arguing with me, sometimes it feels like there's multiple people involved. It's good to see you, my friend.
Sometimes it does feel like there's multiple people there. It is good to be here recording with you just hours after the Lakers were trampled
annihilated
by the Celtics.
So I've been hitting refresh. I've been waiting for the annual tradition of Chris Mannix getting Boston Celtics fans up, just hopes up just a touch too high. I know you were saying before the year or early in the year that there may be a big man away from being able to make the NBA Finals. I assume now your belief is they can make the NBA Finals as presently constituted and maybe win. Am I correct?
You are incorrect. Having seen them get trampled mostly by Milwaukee a few days prior, The Bucks to me are still the class. But I don't want to make this a Celtics thing.
No, let's do it. I'm excited.
Two moves the Celtics should make in the next month and a half. Trade for Davis Bertans in Washington. Terrific three-point shooter. Give up the Memphis pick to go and get him. That pick is probably going to be like in the teens, something like that. Now the Memphis is quasi good. Give up the Memphis pick and some small piece because Bertans will make a ton of money. Get Bertans. He's a floor spacing guy. Make shots off the bench. Re-sign him at a pretty big number next year and have him as part of your core. And at the buyout market, sign another member of the Washington Wizards who could get bought out, Jan Mahimi. Bring in Jan Mahimi. Bring in Davis Bertans. Then you're cooking.
Listen,
then you give yourself a chance.
I've always had the belief that the more Wizards you can add to your team, the better chance you have of winning a championship.
Yes.
Can I throw a different fake trade at you?
Yes.
Especially now that the Memphis pick, which for a long time I know people thought might be one day a number one pick or a top five pick.
Not so much.
Now that that's in play, when I watched the Celtics, and they were great yesterday, and Jaylen Brown, who I mocked the contract extension, that extension looks better and better by the day. I have to concede that point. We'll see how it ages over the next couple years, but through the first few
probably
months,
pretty well.
It could. You know. If he continues this up, it will. I want to see it. Kemba obviously has been awesome for them, but when I watch him and I feel like they're one piece away, I think they should go after Anthony Davis. I think he could really fit with what they're trying to do, and it seems like something that really I think Danny Ainge should look into. Anthony Davis.
Okay.
I think it'd be good. I know he wasn't very good yesterday. Maybe you can, or against the Lakers, maybe you can get him, you know, with his stock is down. Now, I know Danny probably wouldn't trade for him unless he committed to a long-term contract.
Not if you have to include Marcus Smart.
By the way, Marcus Smart. Wicked good Marcus Smart. Did he hit 11 threes the other day?
He did. And I think he's got to. It has to have been the highest percentage of threes for someone that took 20 shots in a game. 20 shots, 18 3-point attempts in that one.
Oh, that's what it was?
Wild.
That's crazy. Good for him because once upon a time he was the worst shooter in the league.
Yes, he was.
And last year he shot a really respectable number, 34-35%.
Mid-30s, something like that.
Which was great and had an 11-3 game. I couldn't believe it. But no, listen, this is. People think I don't like the Celtics, and it's not true.
It's mostly because of me.
There's a few things. I mean, I just got a tortured history with Boston sports in general, but I love Giannis. The Bucks were my preseason pick to make the finals. Last year, they were my pick to make the finals, and I thought they were going to roll to the finals till that triple overtime. Was it triple overtime? Double overtime game three against the Raptors, and they're up 2-0, and the whole series flipped. But I really... Even though I don't like being wrong, would love it if the Celtics could overachieve to make the finals because nothing would be better than if the Celtics finally break through again post-KG era only to meet LeBron in the NBA Finals so he can sweep their ass out of the playoffs again. That kind of would be the perfect way for the season to end. Instead, I think it's going to end with LeBron versus Giannis in the finals, but we're getting ahead of ourselves. Celtics were great yesterday. LeBron was not very good, and the Lakers lost second time in three games after a really good win against Houston in a game I actually was at down in Houston this week.
Great game against Houston. I want to touch on some of the Rockets towards the end because
sure.
You mocked one of my takes in the elevator on the way up.
This is going to be a longer podcast. I promise you, America, Chris Mannix, you think he's had some wild takes before. The Rockets take Chris Mannix is about to unveil is all-time galaxy brain take.
All right.
So we can get to that later. Go ahead.
Top of the Western Conference right now, you've still got the Lakers with a comfortable lead over the Clippers, but those two teams 1-2, clearly the class, I think.
Well, let's be fair to the Nuggets and Jazz.
Yeah, you're
the
right.
Clippers,
well, the Nuggets, let's be fair to the Jazz, they've been uneven most of the year. They're picking some momentum up right now.
My point is Nuggets, Jazz, Clippers, same exact record. All 30-13 with the Clippers potentially could. So you could say the Clippers are in second. You could also say they're in fourth. I mean, I don't know. It's third as well.
I mean, I look at the Clippers' record with Kawhi, like 24-8 as I'm recording this. I mean, they're great with Kawhi in the lineup. He doesn't like to play all that often. But let's just those two teams, I'm still convinced they're going to meet in the conference finals. Are both those teams where you expected them to be right now? The Lakers, I was surprised a little bit by how fast they started. I mean, I thought they'd get off to a good start given the schedule, but that early December stretch where they started to win games against good teams, that surprised me. And the Clippers, when Kawhi plays, they're really, really good. When he doesn't, they're kind of average. So
yeah, so I think both of these teams are exactly where I projected them for the year, which was the Lakers being the best team in the West, and they clearly are. I don't know why people would be surprised at them being awesome. They have two of the six best players in basketball, and their best players actually play all the time, which is helpful. I know Anthony Davis just got hurt, and so he missed five games, but that wasn't a load management issue. LeBron's played 41 of their 43 games. They had, to me, a shocking win. One of the games LeBron missed, the game against OKC, where no LeBron, no Anthony Davis. I think Rondo was hurt for that game as well. Not that Rondo's any good.
Here comes Kyle Kuzma.
And they were right, and it was one of the few good Kyle Kuzma games. The Clippers also, you know this, I picked them to finish fourth in the West and lose in the first round. Do I think that they will lose in the first round? I think that is entirely independent or dependent on who they draw. Like, for instance, I think Dallas is a great story. I don't think Dallas winning a playoff series this year. I don't think they're yet ready for that. And I think that Luka, who is my third favorite player in basketball, and you and I were on this same page, but, you know, it feels like the folks, anyone that actually cared at all about international basketball was saying, so it's not like I was unique in this, and if people care enough to listen to this podcast, a lot of people, that Luka was the clear-cut number one pick of that draft. It was DeAndre Ayton is going to have a really nice career, and he's a really good player. And Trey, I love Trey, but Luka was the only guy who could have been what he was. And his numbers this year are out of this world. I still don't think they're yet ready to be a real contender. I think it's probably another year.
Supporting cast around them. They were playing over their heads a little bit early in the season.
And in a playoff series, I feel like you just throw two people at Luka repeatedly and say, we dare you. Chris Stapps, good luck. We dare you. So, yeah, if the Clippers were to get like the Mavericks in the first round, I think they'd win that series. I don't think they're better than the Rockets. The Rockets are playing, I think that matchup is terrible for the Clippers, and the Rockets are playing terribly right now, so now's not a good time to be pro-Rockets.
Why is that matchup terrible for the Clippers?
Well, they've lost both the times they're 1-2 against the Clippers, I think. I also think, rather than to key in on that specific matchup, to give the bigger point, the thought process was the Clippers would be the best defense in the NBA. And the reason I pumped the brakes on the Clippers' hype was I just can't remember a defense post-Jordan's Bulls that was a great, great defense without a real rim protector. And what Jordan's Bulls had was arguably the three best perimeter defenders in the entire league. And people said, well, Clippers might have that same thing, but the game has changed so immensely since then. And so what we've seen in the Clippers is they're not a great defensive team. They're a good defensive team.
Top 10 defensive team right now.
Yeah, but they were supposed to be the number one defense. Them in Philly, It was supposed to be those two teams, Philly once they got Horford, and Philly's a whole different mess for different reasons.
How are you discounting Zubac as a rim protector?
Oh, okay.
Look, he's got problems, but they're mostly like perimeter problems. Like, he's not great defending pick and rolls. That's a huge problem for that team defensively. But I think he's been a decent rim protector for them.
So here's I guess my other issue with the Clippers is they have two of the best two-way players in the league in Kawhi and Paul George. No one can deny that. My issues with Kawhi are unrelated to how good he is when he actually plays. But all their other key guys are designated hitters. Patrick Beverley is stupendous on one end of the court. Lou Williams is great on the other end of the court. If they were the same person, that'd be a top five player in the league.
True.
Harrell is a really good offensive player. He's a huge liability defensively, unless you include rebounding as part of defense. Zubac is what you said.
Yep.
And so it's just an oddly built team in that you want to have your crunch time five be obviously Kawhi and Paul George, Lou and Pat, and then a fifth guy. But Lou is going to hurt you on the defensive end. Pat's going to hurt you on the offensive end. And so your spacing could be a bit off on one end. And then you also, on the other end, if you've got any liabilities on the outside defensively, it not having a rim protector hurts. So that's my concern with them. And if they do get to play the Lakers, and everyone, like, and I'm not sure they will, and if they do, it honestly might be round two. Like, that's it. It's totally in play that they're the four or the five, and it's a round two matchup. I don't think they have an answer for Anthony Davis. Now, Anthony Davis got to play well in the postseason, people talk about these teams being major players at the deadline. That's the part that I think is missing from some of the conversation. The Lakers, the Clippers, and the Rockets are going to be so hamstrung at the deadline because they've traded away all their picks. Or at least not all of them, but because of the rules on trading picks, like the Clippers traded away all their picks, Lakers traded away a bunch of picks, the Rockets traded away a bunch of picks, but most of those are way down the road. Like, you know who could be a huge player at the deadline if they want to be? The Thunder. But because they've got nothing but picks. But
yeah, they're probably going the other way.
Right,
though.
Of course. I don't think that's what they're going to do. So aside from adding Andre Iguodala, I don't know what major move any of those teams can make, except for buyout guys. And buyout guys do matter, and you know, the Lakers and Clippers will fight for those guys.
I will say this about the Clippers. One player they could be in play for is Kevin Love.
Really?
I think the Clippers could be in play for Kevin Love, yes.
They've got
some contracts there. I mean, you've got and I'm looking it up as we're speaking.
Sure.
You got the Harkless contract. That's like $11.5 million. Harrell is about $6 million. You can make some of the money work to get to Kevin Love's number.
You make some of the money, but don't the Cavs want picks, and don't the Clippers not
Cavs
have
are
that?
Not getting picks. They are not getting draft picks for Kevin Love. And if they do, it's going to be one of those like heavily protected whatever.
So why? This isn't me being trying to argue with you. It's just you actually, you know, you have a hell of a lot more league sources than me. You talk to GMs and stuff. Why would Kevin Love not fetch something of a decent return?
The contract. Like most people I talk to about Kevin Love think in 18 months that contract could be an albatross around his neck. Like right now he's still a good player, very good player.
But he's a very good player.
The injury history is there and there's a lot of concerns about it. He gets moved before the deadline. I think if it's just a matter of expiring contracts, Miami's going to be there to jump on him.
Yes. And Love, I like Love a lot. And he, I think, obviously would be an upgrade for almost any team that would trade for him. But he doesn't solve the Clippers' problem. He's not a rim protector.
Right.
I do think that is a major issue. If it's one thing to just say we're just going to go try to outscore people. But even the Rockets who try to do that, they did say, but we want a rim protector in Clint Capella, and they prioritize that. And so I just think it's very difficult to be a great defense. It was my concern with Boston. With it, that they okay, so you're going to try to build this hard-nosed, tough, athletic team, but if guys get to the rim, my old pal who tussled my hair, Enes Kanter, is waiting for you there.
Monster game against the Lakers last night.
I know.
Monster
he
game for Kanter.
He loves playing LeBron. Loves it. But those are real concerns when, to win the title, you're going to have to beat LeBron and Anthony Davis, and you're going to have to beat Giannis, I believe. You know what I mean? Like, not having a big guy to meet those people at the rim, to me, is concerning.
I think the Clippers, you're right. I think the Clippers, one thing they do well right now is that they can have their own little death lineup out there with Harrell at the five, and can run you up and down the floor. And if you can force teams to play that way, and look, Davis is a five in key situations. You know, if you can force them to play that style, maybe you can have more success, because then you have Kawhi at the four, Paul George at the three, and you can do some damage there. But I think if Kevin Love, if they were, and I think it's more of a long shot, but I think they're in play, that's another guy you could put a death lineup kind of out there as the five man who can rebound a little bit. And
would the Celtics be interested in Love?
Yeah, but one of the biggest problem with Boston is that they don't have the salaries to match. Like, unless they're going to offload, Smart, which they don't want to do, Hayward kind of off the table. It's like Daniel Tice and it's Cantor and it's these $5 million-ish contracts they just can't deal. That's why I suggested Bertans early on. Like, he's the one guy they could fit into their salary structure. So
got it.
Hayward though, I would move Hayward to the bench. I would. You need scoring with that second unit, and Smart is quite frankly a better fit with that front line.
People don't like to talk about this, and I shouldn't say people don't like to talk about this. I think people feel badly because it's not his fault. I don't think anyone blames him, but sometimes traumatic injuries are exactly that. Traumatic injuries, and they change the trajectory of your career. They change who you are as a player, and you don't always just become the same guy. Like, people point to Paul George, but that's not a guarantee. Mm. And so, like, Gordon Hayward, he's not an all-star anymore. No. And I get the problem for Brad Stevens recruited him in college. Like, all these things, and he seems like a great dude. But he's still getting paid. He's still getting, to live out his dream. It's unfortunate that this thing happened. But last year, I thought they should have moved him to the bench, if I were being totally honest. Like, this has been a discussion for quite some time. I think you're absolutely right on that regard.
Yeah, I think actually Hayward's been really good this year. I just think he's almost a luxury in that starting lineup. When you have Kemba, Jalen, and Jason as scorers, and that second unit doesn't have any, bringing him off the bench. But I just don't know that Brad will do it. Like, the closeness of that relationship you alluded to, I think that's a problem.
And Hayward, by the way, especially, he was playing great, and he suffered some weird injury. Was it
broken hand in that Spurs game?
He's obviously playing way better than last year. Yeah. But the one of the better things that happened to the Lakers, in my opinion, was Kuzma being hurt early, because it made it seamless that he could be the bench guy, the scorer coming off the bench. There is immense value in having a guy who is clearly one of your five best players not be one of your starters if he's not good enough to where you're going to run things through him with the starters, so he can run things, he can get his shots, get his touches coming off the bench, and just rotations fit better that way. And I agree with you 100%, because to their credit, the young guys have played great in Tatum and Brown. And Kimba, right now, if the Nets called the Celtics and said, "Hey, Kyrie for Kimba, straight up."
No,
right. You get hung up on immediately. And Kimba's been exactly what the team needed. And credit to them. And he got his first win ever against LeBron yesterday. Do you know? You know what's unbelievable? LeBron was 28-0 against Kimba. Mm. The only player, did you see it, who was better against one other person?
No, was it?
So Michael Jordan, 30-0 against Sherman Douglas.
Another Celtic.
Yeah, 30-0 against Sherman Douglas.
Let's talk about Kuzma for a second, because if I look at the Lakers and their championship potential, he's the wild card in all that. You know, Kuzma has been the definition of inconsistent all season. Some of it has to do with the injury he suffered, missed all of the preseason, had to work his way back into shape and work his way into a new lineup with new guys. But there is an argument to be made that he's not built to play off of and alongside LeBron James and Anthony Davis. To be that type of player almost needs to be just this kind of efficient three-point shooter, can stand in the corner, can give you shots, and occasionally take over offensively. Kuzma has yet to show that. What, if any, is your level of concern with Kuzma figuring it out and becoming, you know, the piece they need on this team?
Oh, immense if they're relying on him. Listen, I think one of the reasons LeBron likes playing with veterans, I think it's multi-layered. One is, if you're not a star, and it is very, very difficult to set stats aside if you haven't been paid yet. And so I think, and that is a human thing. I totally understand it, but I think that is a really hard thing. I think it's one of the things the Celtics were dealing with last year is, guys, okay, ask me to be, you can ask Kevin Love or Chris Bosh to play that role on a max contract. It's like, hey, now it's about winning. You've already had personal accolades. When you've never made an all-star team, when you've never made any real money, and you're trying to prove what level of contract you want the spotlight. That's first of all. Second of all, when I the fun thing for me is I obviously watch the whole league, but I watch every single LeBron game. So there are certain guys that I have a picture of in my head from watching them occasionally, and then they come to LeBron's team, and I'm like, oh, I was way wrong about them. Jordan Clarkson was one. Jordan Clarkson, I'd see him occasionally with the terrible Lakers. Like, oh, he's interesting. His numbers are fine. He got to the Cavs, and I'm like, this guy is a train wreck. He will take 11 shots in 7 minutes. He is the ultimate green light. Cannot stand him. Kuz, this year, especially because they've got two superstars, they're a great team, his immaturity when it comes to the selfishness of his game, and it sounds more cutting than I mean it to, but if he gets a ball on a two-on-one fast break, he's the most likely guy on the team to keep it, even if, you know what I mean? There are certain possessions where he hasn't touched the ball in a few possessions. He gets the ball off a rebound, and he's the only guy on the team that does this, that he'll be the only guy that touches it. He will dribble it up the court, he'll look around, and he'll take a bad shot. And that is typical of young players, especially young players who their rookie year really popped kind of somewhat out of nowhere and are trying to regain that. Last year was terrible shooting season for him, and now this year all his friends are gone. Like, that's the other thing. Like, who on the team is he hanging with? Caruso, I guess? You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Just as far as age. So I don't think he's a fit. I think that, and I know people that aren't LeBron guys get sick of, you know, LeBron gets there and you ship people out. Yeah, you do, and you win championships, and it works. Like, the trading the young core for Anthony Davis absolutely has been the right move, and Kuzma's the only trade chip they have left.
Yeah.
And so, I was really impressed, and LeBron spoke about it after the game. In the Rockets game, Russ was killing them, and they put Kuzma on him in third quarter, and he actually played some good lockdown defense, but I think it's going to ebb and flow. And the one other thing, that stuff Kuzma's trainer said about LeBron, that don't fly, man.
Yeah.
Like, that's that.
That resonated.
Of course it resonated. Mm-hmm. Like, give me the if Mannix, if my, it's a mixed metaphors, if after this podcast, my wife put up an Instagram story, was like, so sick of all these Boston jackasses trying to take my husband's time. Like, you'd be like, okay, well, that clearly came from Nick, and that's going to cause an issue in our relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know, unless you disavow that, I think that's a real problem. And the other part of it was there are fair criticisms of LeBron, even if you don't often hear them from me, admittedly. The criticism the trainer had was LeBron doesn't work on his game, which is so ludicrous and such a, you know, who would say that? A kid that doesn't know better, that, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Someone that might, as a kid, but that's also kind of a grown man, all of a sudden dye their hair platinum. Like, these are and so I think that's a problem. And so it's compounded by the fact, I'm sure he doesn't love his role, and that he's not playing that great. For the second straight year, not playing. He wasn't great last year.
Right.
And so,
not a very efficient player.
No. And so, like, those are all, I know that's a very long answer, mm-hmm. but those are all concerns. But I do think he's the only tradable asset they have.
Yep.
Right? Like, because he's young, he's on a cheap contract.
Yep.
He's valuable to them because he's on a cheap contract and they're so capped out.
But he's being, my understanding of it from talking to different people is that he's being exposed. The last 2 years, the year and a half, he's been exposed a little bit as just this kind of high volume scorer that if you put him on a bat, not to compare him to Jordan Clarkson, but closer to Jordan Clarkson than he is to, you know, a top three type of player on your team. And that's going to make him difficult to deal. Like, there was some talk about Bogdanovic up in Sacramento. The Kings, as crazy as they are not going to do that deal to flop Kuzma for Bogdanovic. I don't know if the market is going to return the type of player the Lakers need in that spot.
Well, and when LeBron comes to your team, it's not just Nick Wright that watches you every day. It's everyone, and it can work really well for you. I think smart NBA people realized Caruso isn't just a meme. He's a good player.
Solid.
He can be the eighth guy on a title team. He can, you know what I mean? If you're only going to play eight guys in the playoffs, he can be that guy. He's smart. He tries defensively. He's a good athlete. And if the Lakers are bad and LeBron's not there, Caruso's just the bald white guy who dunks on people, right? You know what I mean? So there can be a plus side to it. But you also have to be very comfortable in your role and understand the rising tides will raise the boats as far as winning goes. Like, let's just say Kuzma was in the trade, the Anthony Davis trade, instead of Ingram, okay, for a moment. Ingram's not popping the way he is in New Orleans there. Like, it is freeing for a young player. It seems not very good. Things are going to run through me. I can become the fully realized version of myself later in my career. Right now, I'm proving who I am as a pro, and Kuzma's just in a rough spot. Like, there are enormous positives to LeBron coming to your team, but there's also some real tough ones if you're a young player who hasn't been paid, who's trying to prove who they are in the league.
Yeah, look, if I'm Frank Vogel over the next 3 months, assuming that Kuzma stays on the roster, you've got to just force feed him these minutes alongside LeBron and AD, even if they don't go well. I don't think the Lakers can win a championship unless Kuzma is playing a significant role on that team. I think he's got to be an offensive force, whether it is with that second unit or in a starting line or alongside those guys. One of the problems he's having is that last night, or the Monday night notwithstanding, the Lakers always have LeBron or AD on the floor. They couldn't do it last night because
AD's
injury was on administration. Yep. But they always have him. So Kuzma's always going to have to play alongside one of them out there on the floor. And I think you've got to just deal with bad games with him. You've got to try to get him comfortable before the end of the season, because I just don't believe you can win without him making shots and giving you some kind of production with that group.
Yeah, unless Andre Iguodala comes there and takes that spot.
You know what I mean?
Like, because I'm just trying to think about,
when does Memphis invite like Iguodala back? Do they say like, hey man, we're in the playoff mix right now. You want to come give us some help?
That whole thing bothers me.
Yeah,
but that I don't think Memphis is handling that the way you're supposed to handle this in this league. And you can say there are certain, I know baseball is the unwritten rule sport, there are certain understood unwritten rules of basketball, and I think it's, to use a quote from my dearly departed grandfather, it's penny wise and pound foolish.
Mm-hmm.
Players will remember. You know what I mean? Other players, who cares about what Andre Iguodala thinks about you? Other guys respect him. He's a real grown-up in this league. He's accomplished immense things. And what they're doing there, I think, is BS. But if we're trying to figure out who the eight guys for the Lakers rotation will be in the playoffs. So you have LeBron, Anthony Davis, Danny Green, who hasn't been great, but I trust him immensely. Avery Bradley's going to be there.
Yep.
Both centers? Is it going to be both centers, or JaVale will start, but it's, let's just say one center. Let's just, JaVale and Dwight, one guy there. Now we're at five.
Right.
Right? Caruso or Rondo. I don't think it can be both. I would far prefer Caruso. We'll see. Now we're at six. KCP, we're at seven. And KCP, hey, my guy KCP's been good.
He's been good. He's 2 years in a row.
He's absolutely. And so now we're at seven. The eighth guy, of course, and I'm not saying he actually would be eighth, but I'm just counting eight people, is Kuzma. If they get Iguodala, I don't think you don't have to go 10 deep in the postseason.
You're right. And if they get Iguodala, Kuzma becomes not superfluous, but less necessary in
and
that situation.
And I do wonder if there's a moment of, for him, and he can go one of two ways, it could totally derail it, or it's a, hey man, I understand that you think 21 minutes, 5 of 7 from the field is not helping your free agent stock. You know what really doesn't help it? DNP coach's decision.
Mm-hmm.
And in the biggest games of your life. And that's the one other thing. We've never seen any of these guys, well, I shouldn't say any of these guys, because they obviously have remade the team. But we haven't seen Kuzma in a playoff game. And so we've got to see, has KCP played in a playoff game? I'm trying to think if it
was Detroit before
Detroit,
that?
Like so I do, maybe. Yeah. But regardless, like the
not a big situation.
Yeah, any the Lakers that predate LeBron on which there's not many more. There's not many of them left.
Dwight, I guess, you know.
But I'm saying the guys who were there when they acquired LeBron. Right. There's only it's like Kuzma and KCP, those and Caruso. Those guys obviously don't have real playoff experience, maybe none except for KCP. I'm not certain on it. But so I am curious how they play in that spot as well.
Yeah. I mean, to your point also about Iguodala, at some point, don't we have to wonder what kind of condition he's in? Like what he's been doing for
the
last few months?
Golf. I'm sure golf, it's a lot of golf.
And I'm sure he's working out on some level. But, you know, let's say the Grizzlies cut him after the trade deadline. How is he going to be able to get back into like championship level shape in his mid 30s?
Yeah,
it's a totally fair question. That's a legitimate question. All right, let's talk about the All Stars for a second.
Yep.
We can skip the West a little bit. You and I are kind of in sync on those. I had Kawhi over Jokic in that lineup, but you know that's fine either way. The East is where there's some variance.
So we had the same on Harden, Luka, LeBron, AD. And then I had Jokic, you had Kawhi, because you don't think playing matters. I get it.
Yeah, right.
Don't worry about it. Go ahead. Sorry.
I think Kawhi, when he's been out on the floor, has been excellent.
He's been very, very good.
Eastern Conference, same page with Giannis. Same page with Giannis. Same page, Kemba Walker, who's earned his spot in the starting lineup. The Ben Simmons pick is the second guard. That's where I was kind of tortured on for a little bit, because I whittled it down to Ben Simmons and Kyle Lowry. And the biggest argument against Kyle Lowry was the number of games he played in. Ben, I think, has played in or will play in about 10 more games than Kyle Lowry. Now, we're having this discussion in the immediate aftermath of Ben playing out of his mind in Brooklyn and having one of the best games of the season, maybe the best game of the season. But I just have a hard time. Kyle Lowry, we know, really impacts winning on a Raptors team that, I don't know if you call him overachieving, but certainly maximizing its potential. The Sixers right now are not maximizing their potential. And whenever you critique the Sixers, it invariably comes back to Ben Simmons and the things that he's not doing. Now, the things he does do are incredible. They are, you know, defense, rebounding, open floor play. He's awesome. But he continues to refuse to put up anything outside the paint.
Yep.
Refuse to take three-point shots. I'll tell you, Nick, I crowdsourced this a little bit. I sent it out to like half a dozen scouts and asked them, of those two players, which would they pick? And five out of the six said Kyle Lowry.
Let me ask you this, because I think all of that is well thought out, and I think it's smart. How much of that do you think, though, is the fact that Kyle Lowry, rightfully so, is so much more well-respected and better liked? Because you look at Lowry and you say, even after what people would call some immaturity issues early in his career, he has gotten the absolute most out of his, if you want to call it, God-given ability or whatever it is, while Ben Simmons has been the exact same player for 3 years.
I think there's something to that.
And so the reason I mention it is possible that even with not improving at all, he's still better. You know what I mean? Like that he just happened to come into the league, if we're going to use a NBA 2K, as an 88, and he stayed an 88. And Kyle Lowry, at this point in his career, because he's not as good as he once was, even getting the most out of it is an 86.
There's a championship afterglow, too,
right,
you know, from that.
And
yeah.
So I also, though, think the All-Star game, some of it should be a bit of beauty pageant. And if you want to reward Kyle Lowry, I'm totally good with it. I also, though, think the one thing you said that I don't agree with is, yes, a lot of the Sixers' issues come down to Ben, but some of them come down to the fact that Joel Embiid has not taken the leap that he's supposed to. Right? Like, if before the year, did you do an MVP pick? Or are you not?
Yeah, no, I did. Giannis.
I think smart money was on Giannis.
Yeah.
There was, you know, some LeBron potential, as there always is. Mm-hmm. But if someone said my pick's Joel Embiid, I wouldn't have said they were crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone said my pick to come out of the East is the Sixers, because I think Joel Embiid is going to be not a top 12 player, but a top 3, certainly a top 5 player, I'd have said, yeah, he's supposed to be. I believed him when he cried coming off the court against the Raptors, and they were that close to beating the team and ended up winning the title. And is he better than last year? Like, did he get better? Let's set his finger dislocation aside. Like,
right.
If the coaching staff can't get, maybe no one can get through to Ben Simmons, but I would say the guy who has maybe the best chance is Joel. I don't know. Like, it's a tough standard, but he's, at least statistically speaking, a inferior player to last season. And they're not the world beaters, unstoppable defensive team that I think they have the personnel to be, because they don't have one. They have two rimmed protectors. They're one of the longest teams ever. And some of that, so Ben gets a lot of the criticism, understandably, but Joel, because he's still awesome and doesn't have really any holes in his game, skirts on it. But after a year where he gave you, in the numbers I'm looking at them now, I had forgotten how big they were, 27 and 14 a game last year, it wasn't unreasonable to say this year, can he be what the stat line Giannis is putting up? Not the assists, but 30 and 15, and instead to be at 23 and 12 and have the blocks down a tick, the field goal percentage down just a tick, like, that is disappointing to me.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Joel Embiid does not play with consistent force every single night. And when he's engaged, like, we give Rudy Gobert credit for being the best defensive player in the league, but an engaged Joel Embiid, I think, is better. Like, he is just a monster underneath that rim, and how he can just do so many different things. It's just the Simmons critique comes why he won't even attempt threes is hard to understand, because they are practically begging him to do it. If he went 0 for 10, they would throw him apart in the locker room. They don't care if he misses threes. What they know down in Philly is that if he doesn't attempt threes now, there's no way he does it in the postseason, and that's going to kill them.
Of course. And it's unbelievable that he won't do it.
I can't explain it.
The analogy is, there any name that you just can't pronounce no matter how hard you try? So for OG for the Raptors.
Adenobi. Yeah.
Okay. So I've got a mental block with it, and I don't know why, and I really try hard to, especially foreign players, to not just butcher their last name, because I think it's disrespectful. You deserve to be called the right name. But I've just given up out of embarrassment, so I just call him OG, which is confusing, because there's like a thing like, oh, he's an OG. So if I just reference, OG, people I don't even think know who I'm talking about. But I'm embarrassed that I can't do it when I think I'm actually a really good speaker. I know it's an awkward analogy, but when you're such a good basketball player and you feel like, I stink at this, is it about embarrassment? Is it simply about, there's thousands of people here, there's hundreds of thousands or millions of watching at home, why would I do the one thing that makes me uncomfortable when I can just easily do the things that make me comfortable? And the answer is, because if you don't, you don't win. Like, that was why did the Heat lose to the Mavericks? Because the thing LeBron was uncomfortable with, he refused to do, and then he short-circuited, obviously. But you got to get past that. You're now paid like you're a great, great player. You've got to do the things that are even uncomfortable. And I talked to Blake Griffin, and he said, man, I wouldn't let anyone in the gym with me. I was so embarrassed. Like, I was remaking my shot. It was the only thing I could compare it to athletically is I had major shoulder surgery when I was a senior in high school. And the only way to get full mobility back was to do, like, I don't know what the thing's called, but where you lift your arm all the way to the side, whatever it is. But I had to literally, like, if I went to the gym, the only weights I could do it with were like the soft pink ones. You know what I mean? Like the 1-pounders, whatever it is. And so I just never did it. I was too embarrassed. And I still, to this day, by the way, don't have full range of motion because I was an idiot teenager, but it was embarrassing. And I think the fear of embarrassment's a a real one, and it's the only explanation I can come up with.
Yeah.
It's the only one.
It's tough to figure out, especially we both know how hard the guy works. Like, he yes. clearly works to improve his game in different areas. He clearly works on his shot in the off season. There are times that I see him shooting, warming up. He's making those shots.
Yes.
He's, you know, you talk to Brett Brown, he's making them in practice. There just is a block out there.
And that's the other thing, is the form isn't terrible. It's not great, but it's not like he has the ugliest shot in the league. One more thing about the Sixers, because you mentioned Brett Brown. I don't understand how they have not stolen, and it's not like the Lakers invented this, but this year they seem to have perfected it. How many buckets a game do they get from LeBron doing a three-quarter court pass up court to either Anthony Davis or even JaVale, who has just sprinted down, and all of a sudden, because the other big's not down there, they have an instant post-up with a smaller player? I feel like LeBron's got 15% of assists this year on that exact thing.
Mm-hmm.
Joel needs to, when he comes back, they need to incorporate that. The one spot where, I had a really smart NBA person say this to me, it's such a smart point, that
you can name me, it's
for,
okay.
For Biggs, it was Butch Carter, the former NBA coach, brother of...
Oh, I assumed it was me.
No. Really okay, yeah. And he made this point that they let you beat up guys like Joel Embiid in the half court. He's too big. It's been the one spot the refs let the big guy beat up the defender is in transition, if running down the court or trying to get position right then. Take advantage of that. Kick the ball up there, and you have an instant mismatch, and twice a game, you can get a layup. But that's the margins. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and so that's just a small adjustment that I do think is incumbent on Brett Brown to make.
All right, so we agree on Jimmy Butler, who's had a fantastic season in Miami, and they deserve to have somebody in the starting lineup there.
Yep.
I mean, he's been great.
What a year for them so far.
I mean, unbelievable. And they're going to be in play at the trade deadline with some of their expiring contracts. I mentioned Kevin Love. Adebayo has been awesome for them. He's deserves all-star consideration off the bench. I went with Embiid, though, as my fifth choice over Pascal Siakam, which is crazy for me because I've been riding the Pascal Siakam MVP train.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I was on it early. I just couldn't. And look, the number of games played with Embiid and Siakam
is
are comparable.
Identical.
They're comparable.
Yep.
I kind of made my choice on which Toronto Raptor, who's missed a bunch of time, was going to be in the starting lineup, and that was Kyle Lowry. So I have no quibble with Siakam being a starter. I think he's going to have a fantastic second half of the season, and they're going to be monsters in the playoff largely because of him. I had to mix it up a little bit. I had to go with Embiid because he's having, even though it's not the same as last year, still a strong statistical year. 23.5 and 12.5. Like, he's been, and again, engaged a terrific defensive player.
Yeah, and so that, I got no beef with that. I didn't have Kawhi in my starting lineup out west because he's missed this many games without suffering a major injury. If a guy like Siakam or Embiid misses time because of a specific injury where they sit him for, to me, that's a little different than missing games due to rest, and
right.
And I think that's a fair distinction. Maybe other people say miss games a miss game. It's not exactly. That's not quite how I look at it. And even though Siakam, his field goal percentage is down, I think almost 10% from last year. You watch him, and you're like, well, that's just because now this is what happens when you lose. Like, now you're the go-to guy. You have to take the end of shot clock shots. You have to all these things. He's been great. And so you were right that I poked fun when I said, I think it was, I poked fun at you about him being an MVP, and you could have won a lot of money from me because I forgot you have a vote. And
you said he will not get a top five MVP vote, which is...
I said it. I will bet any amount of money. Yes. He doesn't get a single top five MVP vote. I think I might have said top three, but regardless...
No, you said top five.
Okay, but
either
you could have accepted the bet and then just voted him fifth. Even if he never plays again.
Take a
check. They're not gonna, but I appreciate you not doing that to me. But yeah, Embiid's fine. I went Siakam we both had one Raptor and one Sixer, and we just picked different ones.
Totally fine there. All right, let me finish in the Eastern Conference, and we both agree the Western Conference playoffs are going
to
be...
Real quick, though, hold on. You cannot finish in the Eastern Conference because you have to finish with your Rockets
take. All right, we'll touch on the Rockets take at the very end. But last main topic. the Bucks are running away with the conference right now. I mean, I was in Milwaukee for the game they played against Boston. I know it was close and got close at the end, but that felt largely because the Bucks just took their foot off the gas at some point in the second half and let Boston get back into it. Plus, Kemba Walker went crazy in that game in the second quarter to salvage that for him. But that is a complete team. It is a deep team. They can go 11 deep if you throw Sterling Brown out there into that mix.
Differential is huge.
It's record setting. It's almost record setting. It's like 12.5 or something like that. It's
cartoonish.
Giannis deserves. With all due respect to the LeBrons and the other guys in this league, he should be a unanimous MVP this year. He is putting up the kind of numbers that we haven't seen since Shaq's MVP season.
And he's 30, a better defender than Shaq.
Yes, and I saw this in the game notes they gave out in Milwaukee. He is having the most efficient season in NBA history. His PER is the most efficient right now of anybody. And the guys below him were Wilt Chamberlain.
It's Wilt, Michael,
and Michael. Yeah. Like right below him. So I think Giannis should be a runaway MVP. Is there anything?
And by the way, I'm sorry to interrupt. Yep. He's the only guy, when we talk about championship contenders, that doesn't have a star alongside him. And he maybe has the deepest team.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's got a really good coach. But he doesn't have another star along with him. And so, you can't speak highly enough about Giannis.
There is no other team where Chris Middleton could be the number two player on a championship level team. That's how good Giannis is. Is there anything that makes you believe that this team won't kind of just steamroll their way into
the finals?
To the finals.
No, not at all. And I think that I said it a month ago. I would be surprised if before the finals they have to play a sixth game. This does remind me a lot of the Cavs. So the Cavs made the finals when LeBron was 22 with a 48 special against Detroit. They then the next year weren't quite as good. They obviously didn't make the finals. And then they had a 60 and 66 win seasons back-to-back. One of those years, I think they were 39-2 at home. Now, they didn't make the finals. I think one year they lost to Big Three in Boston. One year they lost to
Went
Dwight.
Went 7 games against that team in Boston.
Absolutely. And LeBron, I think, had like a 45-point game 7, but it wasn't enough. They lost the jump ball to Paul Pierce, which Paul Pierce, I think, still has on replay loop in his house when he walks in, when he's not helping Julian Edelman get arrested. Those Cavs teams weren't able to make the finals, but they were just felt like, oh, okay, best player in the league, best athlete in the league, just a freight train in the regular season, not a great second player. You know what I mean? So I would be surprised if they face a sixth game in these NBA playoffs before the NBA finals. The flip side, and by the way, Giannis putting up 30-13, if I'm rounding, 30-13-6 in 30.5 minutes a night.
Wild.
Is insanity.
His per 36 are outrageous.
Well, I mean, his per 36, we just had 20% to everything.
Yeah.
So his per 36 would be 36 points, over 15 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 combined steals and blocks.
While being arguably the best defensive player in the game.
Yeah. I mean, he's certainly first team all defense.
Yes.
It's unbelievable. With all that said, I think that their dominance over the conference is so enormous that as far as the will the Bucks keep Giannis discussion, it would make me far more nervous than if Philly was also having a great year. Because if they don't make the finals, it will be considered rightfully such a failure because they're going to win the conference by 14 games or something insane that if they won 64 and Philly won 62 and Embiid was a top 5 MVP candidate and it's like, damn, last year we lost to Kawhi and this year, you know what I mean, lose to Philly, but we're this close. But if they somehow don't make the finals, then I think the will Giannis leave discussion becomes really, really legitimate. Now, if they make the finals and win the title, obviously, he's there forever, or at least his next contract. If they make the final, I believe if they make the finals and lose to the Lakers, which who I think is going to come out on the other side, I still think he comes back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think it's like,
signs the Supermax, you mean.
Right. Like, yeah. The signs the Supermax, and then they says, okay, we took another step. There's no shame in losing to these guys, but their window is obviously much closer to being shut than ours and these things. But the stakes are high because they're such – it's the way, in an odd way, I felt about the Chiefs in their first playoff game this year, was that everything had fallen perfectly for them. They were playing a terribly coached team in Houston. They were home. They were healthy. They were huge favorites. Like, this season couldn't have been a failure unless you lose that playoff game, and then you're like, oh, is Andy Reid a – you know, you start making maybe drastic decisions that you wouldn't have made, that if the Chiefs had just lost a regular playoff game to a Patriots team, it's like, ah – you know, sucks. And so because there's no real contender in the East outside of them, I think the stakes are enormously high, but I think it's going to result in them not only going to the finals, but I think they could be 12-1 in the Eastern Conference playoffs, something like that.
I would say the only concern I have about the Bucks is Eric Bledsoe, because Bledsoe has had some uneven play in the last two postseasons. I think some of it's been a little overblown. He was bad in that series loss against Boston a couple of years ago. Terry Rozier completely outplayed him in that series. He was pretty good in the first two rounds last season. Then, like the rest of the Bucks, didn't play well in that conference finals against Toronto. But there's no kind of safety net now with Malcolm Brogdon gone. They've done a pretty remarkable job in Milwaukee of replacing Brogdon in the regular season. Wesley Matthews has been a lot better than I thought he was going to be. He is a very good defensive player as a starter. Dante DiVincenzo, you know, this is how teams win. You hit on the Dante DiVincenzos, the 17th overall pick in the draft, who has turned himself. And
George Hill's been fine.
And I think he's still the leading three-point shooter in the NBA. He's like shooting 50-plus percent from three.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, he's been great. He's been better than fine.
Yep.
It's just Brogdon was that one guy that if you saw, you know, Bledsoe starting to struggle and be erratic and miss shots and, you know, get down on himself, you could plug Brogdon in and expect him to be a complete player. He was maybe the second best player during that postseason run for them last year. Again, I don't know if you necessarily need him with all the guys you've brought in to replace him, but if Bledsoe lays an egg in a point guard-driven league, that could be problematic, especially, let's say you play Toronto, which has got a good player in Kyle Lowry, or even, let's say, Ben Simmons gets it with Philadelphia. I mean, there are some teams out there that can beat you at the point guard position. That's the one thing that scares me a little bit if I'm Milwaukee.
Well, listen, I think you're totally right. And I don't think it'll hurt them in the Eastern Conference side of the bracket, but could hurt them in the postseason. Milwaukee's done a brilliant job building that team. The one do-over they would like is the premature extension they gave Bledsoe. They wouldn't have done it, and they would have earmarked that money for Brogdon.
Yeah,
because they could have, like, they could have given Brogdon that money that easily kept him if they hadn't just paid Bledsoe. Now, I know they still could have paid them both if they want to go deep into luxury tax, but that's hard in Milwaukee, I understand, especially when you're planning to make Giannis the highest paid player ever. It's the one mistake. It's the one mistake was paying Bledsoe during the season when you didn't have to, and not seeing that Brogdon's just flatly a better player. A better player and a perfect fit alongside Giannis.
Yeah.
Because he's just such a knockdown shooter and a guy. What is Giannis shooting from the free throw line this year? That's what I thought. It's not good.
Yeah.
And Brogdon's one of the best free throw shooters in the history of basketball. And to close out games. And by the way, Bledsoe's a really good free throw shooter too. He's above 80%. But that's another thing that when we're talking about the very thinnest margins of winning titles, yeah, that's the one mistake they've made. But everybody's got something like that. You know what I mean? And so you just hope that you don't hit on, you don't make every right decision. You don't hit on everything. But that one, it is just an easy, same position, swap those two guys out. But, I mean, would they be better than they are right now? Probably not in the regular season, but maybe in the postseason.
Yeah, yeah, that's the one thing I'll be watching. But I'm with you. I think they roll into the NBA Finals, and we'll see what happens from there. All right, let's finish, as you said there, with the scorching
hot. You're not
hot
ready
take
to unveil this yet.
I've done this.
You.
No, like I did it. We had these bold predictions. You know, I did like a paragraph on it. It sent some people a little nutty when I put it out there earlier in the year. But I haven't sort of put this out there no matter what. To me, if the Rockets' season goes south, and by going south, I mean a first-round loss, I think they have to look at trading James Harden. I think they have to at least explore that opportunity. Now, bear with me. This is a team.
Oh, I'm bearing with. I haven't walked out of the room.
This team has scuffled. This is not a very good team right now. They're battling. They're trying to figure it out.
They haven't been a good team for the last 2 weeks.
Well, I mean, they're a middle of the pack Western Conference team.
Right, but then, but by that definition, then no one's a good team other than the Lakers, because they're all they're in the middle of the pack.
All right, well, they're trending in a not a good direction. Right.
No, the last 2 weeks have been disastrous.
Yes, and there's no evidence to suggest that Westbrook and Harden can consistently be a good threat together, that they can pair together. Mike D'Antoni, God knows what happens to him after this season.
Sure.
Harden is, what, 30 years old now, I think, 29, 30, something like that. Westbrook is past 30. At some point, if you go out in the first round, this team is not going to get better. They have limited opportunity to kind of nibble around the fringes and improve that way. They've got Harden and Westbrook signed through at least like 2024, I think, at massive numbers. They've got Clint Capella signed to a long-term contract, though that is a movable feast because I think there is interest in Capella, and you could move that
and
contract.
And it's not a bad contract.
It's not a terrible contract, no. I just look at the Rockets, and I think you might have looking at a team that has plateaued. And if a team has plateaued, the hardest thing to do if you're a general manager is to say, look, I've got this asset here in James Harden. He's never going to be more valuable. In the coming years, there's a reasonable chance he'll get less valuable if all the wear and tear of having to carry that team over the last few years starts to catch up to him. I would at least have to look and see what's out there and see if you can get a mega trade back in return. We saw, Nick, what Paul George got from the Clippers. And granted, that was a different set of circumstances. The Clippers needed to do that. I mean, if they can get a mega offer for James Harden, don't you have to at least look at it? Is it not better to be proactive with a player like that instead of reactive and dealing when you're in a position of weakness instead of strength?
I guess I've just never seen, and with respect to Paul George, he is not in James Harden's class.
He is not.
I've never seen the team that trades the MVP candidate, some people would argue the best player in basketball. I don't think he's that, but he's definitely one of the five best. You could certainly argue one of the four or three best. And the team that traded that guy away won. The hardest thing for a GM to do is to get James Harden. Like, I give you a hard time about the Celtics, but the Danny Ainge obviously is a smart general manager and obviously is, you know, well above average at what he does. But the reason they have not been back to the NBA Finals since KG was, you know, since the years, the first 3 years they had KG, was because that was the last time they had an MVP-level player. And the Thunder have done a great job with the Paul George trade. But guess what? SGA is not going to ever be an MVP candidate, I don't believe. We will see what those picks, some of whom are currently 11 years old living in Southern California, what those players turn into. If those guys are worth their weight in gold, and Harden he turned 30 right before the season.
Right.
He has been shockingly durable. You know what I mean? He is people can dislike the style of play or all these things. He clearly works as hard on his game as anyone in the league. He adds something new every single year, and you can't bottom out with him. Like, you just can't. And Daryl has clearly gone all in on this team because you traded away your future picks for a guy who he knew. He doesn't think I haven't talked to Daryl about this, but he's a smart guy. He knows that Russ in 2022, when he has a $47 million player option, that is going to be a travesty. But you did it for this year and next year, and if you're lucky, the following year. I'm looking at their contracts now. They have Gordon locked up for the entirety of Russ and Harden's contracts. They've got P.J. Tucker locked up for this year and next year, and they have Capella locked up for the entirety of Russ and Harden's contracts. Like, that's your team. And you sometimes you swing and you miss, and it happens. But I can't trade a guy who, is right now in the midst of a downswing while averaging 37 points.
No, I'm not even, it's not even a short-term kind of, like, I'm looking at this in a two-week bubble here.
Yep.
He is a remarkable offensive player. Third year in a row, he's going to lead the league in scoring. He's at, what, 37 per game right now? It is wild. And speaking of the durability, he's leading the NBA in minutes
now.
I mean, he is.
And he's done that multiple times.
He is incredible. Looking at the number of games, 78, 72, 81, all 82 before that. I mean, he
and
is.
And the year he played 81, he was suspended the game. Yeah, night off. I mean, it's just, no. He's. I know people don't like him because it's not a fun style to watch. I get it. But
not his fault, though. They built that team to cater to his strengths. Yeah.
Absolutely. It's effective. And so I cannot conceive of having one of those guys, because you can be, I mean, Milwaukee had one of those guys, right? Mm-hmm. And they had to trade him. I get it. And they waited how long till they got another? 40 years? Was it 40? 35 years? Yep. However long? From Lou Alcindor to Giannis? The Bulls had one of those guys. And then they thought they had it again in Derrick Rose, and they did, briefly. He blows out his knee. Like, you just can't. I don't think you can ever let that asset go. And
but if they don't win this year, would you not agree that next year they're less likely to win, and the year after that they're less likely to win?
Yeah, I of course, but I also did feel that way about the Mavs. Like, you know what I mean? The year Dirk wins MVP, they're the one seed. They'd flamed out in the playoffs before.
That's true, yeah.
And they didn't win, but they didn't tear it down. And then things broke. You know what I mean? Things broke right for them, and the reason they were there was because they held on to their top five guy. And so it's very, very hard to win the title. And in all likelihood, the Rockets will look back on 15-point lead, Game 7,
yep,
Western Conference Finals, in your building, and then missing 27 threes in a row, which is still like the cruelest universe joke ever played on a guy. Is that happening to that team with that GM? Probably, that's the closest they'll ever come. And hell, I would argue you maybe should really hang a banner for taking the KD Warriors at full strength to 7 games. Like, no one else took them past 5.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's they were a great team, And by the way, they were up 15 in that game without Chris Paul, and they were up 15 in Game 6 without Chris Paul. And they just couldn't cash it in. So probably that was as good as it'll get, but I couldn't break it up. I could not move on from Harden. It's, to me, he is more valuable than, I want to just pick a team. Like, Harden has more value to me than the entire roster of the Spurs. And the Spurs might make the playoffs. You know what I mean? But as far as ability to win a championship, like,
I would agree.
Right. And so I just couldn't do it. That's all.
I would agree. This is your team, though. Like,
it's your team.
Like, you can move Capella, sure, and maybe you get something that fits in better with that system. But I think Gordon is probably going to get harder and harder to move as he gets older. He's got an injury history as well. You got some other minor pieces there. But Westbrook, Harden, Gordon, the amount of money they make, it's going to make it difficult to nibble around the fringes. And without draft picks, to get the Dante DiVincenzos of the world, that makes it even more difficult. Well, so it's you just kind of, like, in some ways, you're going to live with, you know, we are a ceiling of a second round playoff team. And maybe if things break right, an injury here in the playoffs, Harden going bonkers, Russell Westbrook discovering a jump shot in year like 13 of his career, maybe things can break right. And you make a good point with Dallas. Like, the way they turned it around, like, that was, I mean, that was, I didn't see that coming in 2011 to play
did.
Like that.
And lastly, I will say, because I was at that game Saturday, Lakers Rockets.
Yep.
Man, I have not seen a player. Now, it didn't last, but I have not seen a player give LeBron the blues for the better part of 2 quarters the way P.J. Tucker did in forever. Like, LeBron struggled massively for a quarter and a half. Then he got hit in the face. They didn't get a call. He got super angry and it took over. It also helped that during that stretch, PJ got dinged and had to go to the locker room, so LeBron kind of got in a rhythm. But in a playoff series, PJ Tucker can eliminate some of the best players in the league as well as just nobody really eliminates the best players, but as well as, to me, as well as Kawhi can on the defensive end or whomever you want to say, the perimeter defenders, PJ Tucker's on that list. And that, to go along with Harden's ability to casually drop 40 and the variance of, is this going to be a good Russ night? Like, they're still dangerous. To me, they are still a scarier playoff team than Denver or Utah. Like, they have more upside there, but they're also more likely to have a game where Harden goes 1 of 17 from 3, and they have no counterpunch. So I get that part of it.
I'll say this to finish up. To acquire Harden, I would be willing to trade Marcus Smart and the Memphis pick.
God. Wow. Wow.
I think that's enough. I wouldn't go any further.
No, Jaylen Brown, untouchable.
You are talking about the likely defensive player of the year in Marcus Smart.
Oh, my God. Will he even be first team?
He'll be first team. Although not a great couple of weeks for Marcus Smart watching, you know, Devin Booker go crazy on him. Yeah. And
Listen, it's such. I'm glad we ended with the Celtics. For the Celtics fans listening, I am so happy that you are back exactly in the spot you are most comfortable in, which is you have an overachieving, plucky team that is going to make you foolishly believe that you actually can maybe, if things break right, win a title. And as much as I love Giannis, nothing would thrill me more than the Celtics making the NBA Finals, because you know who will be waiting for him.
Nick, always appreciate it, man. Catch Nick every morning on First Things First, 6:30 a.m. evening, 6 o'clock, right?
Yeah, 6 p.m. on the radio.
6 p.m. Sirius XM. Thanks for joining me, man, as always.
Of course. Later, brother.